man's.
Back, wait a second.
Oh, shoot.
All right, let's be in order. Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to call Mr. John Felling to answer some questions related to recovery of costs, please.
Mr. Felling, as you heard me advise Ms. McCartan, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000 imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Felling, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Felling, I believe Commissioners Clark and maybe also Commissioner Kramer asked you about the recovery of costs related to these IntelliTeam switches, given the fact that they are going to be installed in Fargo. Do you have a response as to how those costs are recovered and fundamentally why the company proposes to recover the costs in that fashion?
Yes, those are distribution facilities which we do socialize across all the customers in the state of North Dakota. As we make investments in North Dakota, whether those investments are in Minot or Fargo or Grand Forks, those investments are socialized across all customers. If we expand the Intelli switches and install the switches in Minot or Grand Forks, those would also be socialized across all customers in North Dakota. I think, as Mr. Limoges may mention, that there's certainly a possibility that we may be expanding the Intelli switches to other areas. And again, when we do, those will be socialized as they are, the switches that we're installing now in Fargo. So.
Thank you. Your Honor, I have no further questions, but...
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Is this the pole attachment witness?
No, Ms.
I forgot who was who.
Sorry, yeah. We will have, actually, Mr. Joe Mansour, who is participating by phone, and he will be available to answer the poll attachment question.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
I don't know if this is a question. It's probably a fairly leading one if it is. But I suppose in a similar vein, flood costs that are associated with Minot are socialized to residents in Fargo. And in the past, natural disasters in Grand Forks were spread across the region. So it really is operated as a single system, isn't it?
Commissioner, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Koch.
Just one. Did you hear my previous question about these things? To your knowledge, been tested somewhere where it's extreme weather, where we've seen challenges before where something worked in Colorado, but it didn't necessarily work in northern North Dakota?
Yeah, I did hear that question, and as Ms. McCartan said, I would have to defer that as well. I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Loftus.
I guess there is one follow-up. I recall there was a question about the inclusion of the Minot flood-related costs and the restoration costs as a part of this settlement. I believe maybe Commissioner Clark had a question about that. I'm not sure, Commissioner Clark, if you wanted Mr. Felling to follow up on that question from you or not.
Well, I'm trying to remember what it was, but I'm just looking at my notes.
If I recall correctly, I think it might have been more of a fundamental rate-making question about, how these costs are included as opposed to are they just kind of recovered in the existing test year revenue requirement.
I think I had it answered to my satisfaction from Ms. McCartan. It was just related to regulatory philosophy of what should be recovered in any given rate case and so on and so forth. And her answer that it was part of a settlement, I think, was fine.
Thank you. Your Honor, in that case, I have no further questions.
Follow up, Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
Thank you very much, Mr. Felling. Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Next, I would like to call Mr. Joel Limoges, please. And, Your Honor, Mr. Limoges will answer questions regarding the IntelliTeam switches.
Mr. Limoges, as you know, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. You raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Limoges, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Loftus, I noticed the court reporter looking to see, I assume, how Mr. Limoges spells his name, and I don't see it on the list, so you might provide that information to begin with.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Limoges, will you please provide your full name and spelling for the record, please?
Joel Limoges, Limoges.
Mr. Limoges, Commissioner Kalk had a question about the testing of these IntelliTeam switches, and in particular, had they been tested to deal with weather that can be experienced here in North Dakota. Do you have a response?
Yes, I do. We have 70 of these type switches in service in Minnesota. The weather in Minnesota is not markedly different than that in North Dakota. The manufacturer on their website has a test of these switches installed in Alaska. So there's nothing on these switches that would be affected by cold weather. So we believe that they will work properly.
Thank you. There is also another question, I believe, from Commissioner Kramer with regard to replacement of underground cable, and I believe maybe the standard that's involved or what standard the company uses when it determines whether or not to replace that cable. Can you provide an explanation of the company's process?
Yes. There are basically two different types of cable. There's mainline cable, which is basically the feeder. It serves up to, on a 23 kV system, it can serve to 8,000 to 10,000 customers. That cable, when it experiences two insulation failures, the entire piece is replaced. Okay. Then there's another set of cable, which we call tap cable, which runs through the neighborhoods, and it goes transformer to transformer to transformer. And that cable is installed, you know, as the system evolves and grows. So we have a little bit different criteria to replace it. Any two cable failures on a segment, to replace that segment, transformer to transformer, essentially. Any three outages, three cable failures on the half loop that goes from a fuse to transformer to transformer, and then that ends up at a transformer where you leave it open to another side so that we can switch around the failed piece of cable. Three outages on a half loop, you replace the entire half loop. Or two-thirds of the segments on a half loop fail, we would replace the entire half loop. We're trying to get to minimize the customer disruption by this policy.
Thank you, Mr. Limoges. Another question that was raised was the potential for expansion of the installation of these switches beyond Fargo, perhaps to Minot or Grand Forks. Can you provide a discussion on that potential?
Yes. When we look at evaluating reliability enhancements, we're always looking at a cost benefit. We assign a value for customer minutes out. We assign the capital investment cost and the ongoing maintenance costs. The 23 kV system is our standard company-wide to put these switches on 35 kV systems because you have much higher customer counts. So on our cost benefits, the cost benefit is a very high ratio. 23 kV system that has slightly lower customer counts but still higher than the 15 kV system. So the cost benefit for the Fargo system has just cleared the cost benefit hurdle to be implemented in Fargo. One would expect that over time, the 15 kV system would clear the same cost-benefit hurdle, but it's not there today.
Thank you. Your Honor, I have no further questions for Mr. Limoges.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Cook.
Thank you for your testimony, Joel. You came on and briefed us after the Fargo outages. You were part of that discussion that day, weren't you?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of, that's, I guess, the backdrop of some of my questions now. Is it, you must be an electrical engineer or something too, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not an electrical engineer, so bear with me. The when you talk about the methodology for replacement, you know, if it does this, then you do that. Where are those decisions made? Is that a think tank somewhere in Minneapolis? Is it somebody in St. Cloud? Is it somebody in Fargo? When you look at this, you know, something goes wrong, some lineman, I assume, would go out and look at it. I mean, walk me through how do you spool that information, if you will?
The policy is developed by a cross-functional team led by engineering, which is my staff. We take input from our line crews, from our standards people, and based upon that, we make our policy. Now, a policy is just a guideline. So that's our first cut that says, you know, the vast majority of your cable replacements go through the policy. We also take into account, we have a mechanism for our field people to tell us that from time to time we'll have a cable that didn't fail multiple times, but when they went out to splice it back together, they noticed that it was in poor repair. And they get that information into us, and then based upon what they tell us, we may or may not initiate
so how does that,
a cable replacement
that
project.
Practically work then? Someone on the ground in Grand Forks sees something, they'll submit it to some database, and you review it, you know, weekly, monthly, quarterly?
Actually, they'll pick up the phone, and we'll have an engineer talk to them in real time and make that decision
okay.
there.
Fair enough. And then you talked about, you know, the cost-benefit analysis in the Fargo because of the size. But when you look at maintenance challenges, prior to the flooding in Minot, it seemed like that system up there just was pretty reliable. We've had a long-term, not shouldn't say long-term, in the last couple, 3 years, a lot of problems in Fargo. You know, I understand these switches will help us to some degree potentially, but, you know, based on your knowledge and experience of the system, why is that happening or why has that happened? Is there something that you could pinpoint knowing the system since you probably get the feeds from all the regions?
We are always studying why reliability is much better in one place than the other.
Right.
We typically tend to focus on places where reliability is not as good as places where it's good. We don't really have a good answer for why Minot has been performing so well up until this year as opposed to some of the other areas. You see that across the company. Reliability is mostly weather-related. And for some reason, the Minot system just does not have to seem to have experienced the same weather that we've seen in some other places. Fargo's had some interesting challenges the last few years. I mean, we've had a flood there basically every year for the last 8 years.
Sure.
And that does weaken structures and things like that. It enhances tree growth. All of those things go into accounting for why reliability is challenging.
Is there something different that you have in the Minot system than you do in Fargo Grand Forks? And what I guess what I'm thinking just myself is when I go to Minot, it seems like they've got their own crew of technicians, if you will, that they operate just in the Minot area, where you've got a group of folks that operate between Grand Forks and Fargo and other areas. It seems like Minot might have its own dedicated maintenance staff.
We have dedicated staffs in both Fargo, Grand Forks also.
Are they sized similarly to customers?
I'm not in a position to answer that.
Okay. Thank you. That's maybe, I think, a follow-up question then to somebody. Is that the maintenance staff compared to Minot, Grand Forks, and Fargo, if they're sized to the service area they serve, if that makes sense. Thank you, Your Honor.
Further, Commissioner Clark.
I don't know if I had some questions related to depreciation of these sorts of switches, expected life expectancy, so on and so forth. Would this be the witness to direct those to?
Commissioner Clark, Joe Mansour, who will be next, will be able to answer that question.
Thanks.
Any further questions for Commissioner Kramer?
Thank you, Your Honor. Joel, I referenced earlier Mr. Gopper's testimony. Have you read that testimony?
Yes, I have, Commissioner.
The two stipulations he's asking us to consider, I kind of wanted to flesh that out a little bit with what you just said with regard to what your current policy is. His first one regarding outages involving more than 25 homes. describe the half loop, the loop, and homes, and how the policy you just described might affect 25 homes, or if 25 homes is even the right number if we were to adopt some type of a stipulation like this.
Okay. Back to that cable discussion. Thank you for that question, Commissioner. That cable discussion where the cable goes from the fuse, which is typical on the overhead system, to a transformer, to a transformer, to a transformer. Typically, on average, you configure each transformer serves about 8 homes. Okay? That's not the same as a customer. You know, the commercial customers have their own transformer many times. So at 25, pretty much every cable failure would be reported. These loops that we're talking about.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah. And that if there were a number of them that affected 25 people, that would be a pretty good indication there's a problem, obviously, because it would require easily 3.5 loop and maybe more.
Yes, Commissioner, that's true.
With regard to a second stipulation that he's suggesting, it has to do with a plan for scheduled replacement of to prevent failures caused by aging. I take from that that what he's saying is that you know how old the cable is under the ground. There should be a regular schedule for replacing it. We all know cable was an experiment when some of this underground was an experiment when some of this went in, and it's in some cases a failed experiment, in some cases hugely successful, and it all depends on your experience, I suppose. Do you have some sort of a replacement for age criteria, or is age really the relevant issue? And I'm not frankly sure that it is.
If we could correlate age to failure, we would replace it on an age basis. We also don't really know the age of a cable. We can't look at a map and say this cable was installed in 86 or 87. We can only give a range. So, but there's some dates of manufacture. You can dig it up, cut it apart, which is like the worst thing you could do to a cable system that's functioning work, right? You could, on there are some date stamps inside the manufacturing of the cable. But other than that, we don't have any record of dates. There's a date when a GIS system went into service within the last 10 years or so that we would have those dates. But prior to that, we do not have the dates. And we have been unable to correlate age and failure.
Okay. So with regard then back to stipulation number one, is this an unreasonable stipulation for us to adopt, and why or why not? And secondly, if not, is there a more stringent standard that we could or should apply?
I believe someone else is going to testify as to what the data we already report as far as reliability, et cetera.
Then my last question would be the issues, the specific issues relating to this Harwood Groves area, which I believe, the Harwood Groves neighborhood, has that cable been replaced yet?
There's been several segments of that have been replaced, and we've just initiated a plan. We're in the permitting process to put a pretty good fix into that neighborhood.
All right. Very good. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Cook.
Just a follow-up from the follow-up, if you will. So you talked about weather before. So can you correlate weather to failure? I mean, when you put it in the magic box, it comes out with tornadoes going to equal this.
I don't have any magic box that does that.
Must be some model somewhere, right?
Yeah. I can tell you that lightning correlates with cable failures very well. And that's a frustration for our customers because they'll make it through the storm, and then a couple of days later when the sun is shining, the cable will fail, and they'll say, hey, we made it through the storm, but yet now we fail. That's typically how a cable fails, and it's lightning. I believe we talked about that when I was here last.
So, but in predicting failure, what do you use to predict failure? Is there something that you use inside the system, though, that you can predict failures down the road? You said, you know, just from your experience, weather is that if you look at a flooding event, there'll be certain type of things that you can predict. I mean, I'm looking for, I guess, a model of something. It seems like we have models for everything these days. But there's none that you know of that you correlate those across.
There's no model that I can...
Just experience.
If you're asking, we had 50-mile-an-hour winds and a flood, do we have a model that can now say, oh, wait, we expect X amount of pole failures? We don't have a model that does such a thing.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Loftus.
I have none, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have a request, Pat. Is it okay with everyone if Pat Fawn asks a question of this witness?
Well, Pat's an engineer, too, so this can be.
Earlier, you were talking about that. You had indicated that if you had to report every time 25 homes were out of service, that would basically be every cable failure would be reported then.
The vast majority of the cable failures would be reported at a 25 customer threshold.
And also, I just want to make sure we're talking apples and apples, but earlier you indicated that a cable would probably be replaced if there were two failures or maybe three.
Two failures on a segment, three on the half loop. Two on the segment gets the segment replaced, three on the half loop gets the entire half loop replaced.
And are we talking about the same kind of failures here? The two or three that would the response would be to replace cable versus the failures that would be reported if there were 25 homes out of service.
Not sure I understood that question.
Well, I'm thinking that if 25 homes are out of service, if every cable failure were reported because of that, and the standard is two or three outages. It seems like maybe everyone, every time it should be reported because it only takes two or three to cause a cable to be replaced.
So what's the question?
I just want to make sure that we're talking apples and apples.
I think we are.
And maybe reporting every cable failure isn't such a, maybe it isn't outrageous. And do you think it's reasonable then to report every cable failure?
I believe there's going to be another witness talking about that reporting process.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, Your Honor.
Follow up from the commissioners. Anything further? Mr. Loftus, follow up.
I have none, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman,
Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Lamoche. Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to call Mr. Joe Mansour, who is participating by phone, to answer questions regarding the IntelliTeam switches and Minot flood costs.
So I'm assuming, Mr. Mansour, you can hear me.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mansour, as you have heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Mansour, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Mansour, Commissioner Clark asked a question about the useful life of these IntelliTeam switches. Can you please provide a response to that question?
My estimation would be the useful life of an IntelliTeam switch is approximately 30 to 35 years.
Your Honor, if it might be appropriate, I could just ask Commissioner Clark if he has any follow-up questions. And
no.
Sorry.
Mr. Grumman?
I have no questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No questions about switches. questions about pole attachments.
Well, that's why.
Am I allowed at this point?
Yes. Is this the witness who will address that? Then
I think
then,
so.
And now is your turn.
Okay. Mr. Mansour, I was just curious when I read the numbers for those Quest pole replacements. And I wondered what the timing of that change in the Quest corporate plan, which causes, of course, a change in the NSP plan, and the relationship and timing of that to the sale to CenturyLink. And I didn't know if this large increase was due to the sale or despite the sale. What can you tell me about that?
Sure. I don't think it had anything to do with the sale itself, because the change in our activity in terms of having to do increased transfers actually started, or we were notified back in 2008 that then Quest was embarking on a new program where on a 10-year cycle, they hope to go through their entire wood pole plant and have every one of the poles that they owned throughout their territories inspected. So in summary, I guess what I'm trying to say is their formal pole inspection program started back in 2008.
Okay. And that does clarify that. And then my next question was going to be about the staff's original recommendation on how to allocate or how to account for the costs for the North Dakota replacements, because there were so few. There were so few failures in North Dakota. And I was going to ask if the company, if NSP, had considered using the staff's allocation. I understand there's a settlement, but as far as the process going forward, but your response that this is a replacement plan of Quest unrelated to failure may be the answer, but can you tell me, can you give me an answer to that question, please?
I'm sorry, can you clarify? I guess I'm not understanding what it is you're asking.
The staff had recommended that the allocation of the costs for these pole attachments be done differently because the failure rate in North Dakota was so low compared to the rest of the Quest territory.
Oh, I see. I think I understand.
And then I was going to ask if the company was, you know, agreeable to changing that allocation method or not, and if not, why not?
Yeah, the allocation method the company used was basically we took a look at the increased workload that we've been getting from Quest on an annual basis in terms of requests for us to come and transfer our facilities off of poles they've just replaced as a result of their inspection program. Our allocation method was based on the number of attachments we have in North Dakota relative to our total NSP Min company attachments. So in other words, the percent of attachments to CenturyLink in North Dakota relative to North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota as a whole. I think what you're speaking to is the recent historical transfers we've had to do have been very minimal. We supplied like transfer history going back to 2008 up through 2010. And it's true that it's been basically we have not seen an uptick in North Dakota yet. However, the reason for that is because as you might expect, when a company administers an inspection program, they basically do it on a grid basis. So they start in various towns and counties, and they work their way through the entire town or county in making sure that they cover the entire grid before they move on. the information we have is, as of yet, the inspections, even though New Century or then Quest started their program in 2008, they had yet to do any inspections in North Dakota. Their tentative plans were to start this year in the, I believe it was the Bismarck-Mandan area in 2011, and then in 2012, their tentative plans are to start inspections in Fargo and Grand Forks. So the increase we're going to see as, you know, as XL Energy in terms of our North Dakota operations will really likely manifest itself in 2012.
Thank you.
Now, Commissioner Clark.
Thanks. Maybe the easiest way to answer my question might be to, if there is a table somewhere in the documents or exhibits that you have filed that points me to the how the $250,000 per year increase in revenue requirement was arrived at with relation to the IntelliTeam switches. Is that detailed anywhere, or was that just a number that was arrived at through the settlement?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Okay, that's fine. I'll direct that at someone else. And I think that you understand what I'm trying to get at. It's just some justification for the $250,000 cost. If it's a 30 to 35 year asset, just kind of back of the envelope, you're recovering in the neighborhood of $8 million if the future commissions keep in that $250,000 a year, which must be somehow made up of the return on the undepreciated portion of the asset and an allowable expense recovery for the depreciation. So if there's some table that points me to the reasonableness of that $250,000, that would be helpful. Thanks. Or a witness who can describe it or produce it.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Kalk.
Just one question. You said 30 to 35 years. What's the longest one that you know of that's actually been in service? Is your estimate based on one that's been in service, or just strictly that, an estimate based on your background?
I not based on any particular switch I know of that's been in service that long, but more on my engineering background and knowledge of, typically how long not only automated switches have lasted on our system, but also normal switches, non-automated, I should say.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Mansour, there was a question about the 2009 Fargo flood, and I believe the costs related to that. And if I remember correctly, how those costs were recovered. Do you have any explanation or background to provide in response to that question?
Well, I believe, as Mr. Lamoge had mentioned in his earlier testimony, we have been experiencing on a more routine basis flood issues in the Fargo area. And it seems like that has been a typical event for us year over year to some degree. Basically, when it comes to Fargo versus what we've experienced in Minot, the Fargo flood was a much less severe event. The amount of expenditure is probably on the order of 10% or less of the overall impact in the Minot situation. And indeed, the Minot situation was kind of an all-hands-on-deck event, including having to bring in personnel from Minnesota and South Dakota in force. Whereas when it comes to our annual experiences with Fargo, again, much less severe, much smaller magnitude in comparison, and most of which we can handle with local North Dakota personnel.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. And then one other question that was raised regarded the Minot flood costs and the cutoff date for when the cost estimates provided in the settlement agreement. What was the cutoff date for those costs? Do you have a response to that question?
I don't have an exact date, but I believe it was we provided that estimated number in like the first week of September.
Thank you, Mr. Mansour. Your Honor, I have no further questions.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Pat and I were just discussing, didn't the previous witness just defer one of the questions on Mr. Galper's information to this witness?
Actually,
or was that to somebody else?
Right. Mr. Dave Cedarquist will respond to Mr. Galper's request.
And then one last thing. I think for the witnesses that did not have the pre-filed exhibits, it would be helpful to have some information on their position. I don't really know who these people are, and I can't look it up anywhere. Thank you.
No, that's a great point, and Your Honor, we'll be happy to provide the bios of all company personnel who did not pre-file testimony but have answered questions today.
Is that a request, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, for a late-filed exhibit?
Yes, or, please.
All right. For the record, Mr. Loftus, that will be Exhibit 25, and that will be biographical information for all witnesses who had not filed pre-filed testimony. Is that agreeable, Mr. Loftus?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Any objection, Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Exhibit 25, as identified, is received as a late-filed exhibit. Anything further, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, Your Honor.
Follow-up from the commission. Any further questions from the commission? Anything further, Mr. Loftus, with regard to Mr. Mansour?
No, Your Honor.
Now
thank
departing.
You, Grumman.
Anything further with regard to Mr. Mansour?
All
right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mansour.
You're welcome.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Next, I would like to call Mr. Michael Bull, who is participating by phone, and he will respond to questions regarding the EPA pilot project.
Mr. Bull, as you heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period up to 5 years, or both. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Bull, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, before I ask Mr. Bull any questions, I just wanted to note for the record that Exhibit 22 is our response letter relating to the EPA pilot project. Just as a note of clarification. And, Your Honor, I have no specific questions for Mr. Bull, but I do tender him for any questions that the commissioners or the other parties may have. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman?
I have no questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have no questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Sure. Thank you, and thanks for being here, as well as the response Exhibit 22. So you can walk me through the genesis of this. It's my understanding that this was something that XL was approached by Minnesota state officials, basically the MPCA and the EPA, to participate in this advisory committee with this group that they were working on. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
They approached us and requested that we participate in this in an advisory capacity to this pilot
sure.
project.
I would assume it's one of those offers you can't refuse. Is that? Are you familiar with the genesis of it? I mean, was it something that the Minnesota PUC was on the ground floor? Was it purely EPA and MPCA that did this? Was this a project of this Great Plains Institute? I mean, who kind of thought this up and put together the collaborative?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the EPA approached our Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in the spring with the idea of a pilot project like this, where we could look at these various rules and see if there are ways that they could be more cost-effectively implemented together. And from there, the Pollution Control Agency reached out to the Minnesota Department of Commerce, Division of Energy Resources, and the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to ask if they would coordinate with them, with the Minnesota PCA, and help sponsor this this project. So it's now we generally refer to it as the Minnesota-EPA Power Sector Rules Project, because it's a group of state agencies working together, representing both our environmental regulators and our economic regulators.
Okay, you called that the Minnesota EPA what rules project?
And Power Sector Rules Pilot Project.
Power Sector Rules Pilot Project. And the, and forgive me, the Great Plains Institute comes in where?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the Great Plains Institute was contracted asked to participate for facilitation purposes by the Minnesota state agencies. I'm not sure it was
now attending.
Was that a decision that all three agencies participated in, or any one in particular? I don't know.
Okay. So whatever facilitation costs, those are coming through the state and the EPA, but not through our utilities.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I actually don't know the financial arrangements.
Okay. The reason I'm asking all these questions is in related to, it would seem as though whatever comes out of this could have a pretty dramatic impact on North Dakota ratepayers, because as we've been told many times in the past, XL operates an integrated system that's run for the benefit of ratepayers throughout its northern NSP region. So not just North Dakota, but South Dakota, Wisconsin, and I think even a little bit of northern Michigan. Are you aware through this collaborative, have officials from other states ever been invited to participate in this collaborative, understanding that it's not necessarily XL's role as just one member of the AC advisory committee to do so, but are you aware of it, that any invitation was ever extended to any one outside of just the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't know that anyone outside the state has been invited to participate. I do know that my understanding is that there are a number of folks from other states that are sort of calling in and monitoring the activities of the work groups when we have formal meetings, so that the agencies are trying to make this as open a process as possible, so that they can the idea, as I understand it, the EPA wants to be able to sort of if we're able to come up with a series of recommendations that will reduce the cost of implementing these rules, that they want to be able to sort of highlight those for other states as well. And so if there's a so I think they're trying to include more folks in these to be able to monitor and observe these discussions.
Are you aware of how officials from other states would have been notified about it?
No, sir. Okay. I do not.
These aren't directed to you because it's not necessarily, like I said, as just a member of the advisory committee, your responsibility to take care of it. But I just am curious how we ended up in this situation where there could be decisions made that have a dramatic impact on North Dakota, and it doesn't appear that North Dakota has even a seat at the table. That
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, and we're very sensitive to the concerns you're raising. I think one thing I would add to Ms. McCartan's very good overview and description of the project is that we are working very closely with Minnesota Power, but also with representatives of our large industrial customers and other business customers in very close coordination as we work through some of the policy discussions that we're just starting now to have, but also in the modeling, we're working to develop a baseline, modeling baseline, and there's a lot of key assumptions built in as we build that baseline that we want to make sure that our customers are on board with as well, and so I think we're paying very close attention to the potential impacts on our customers, it may have been a request that we couldn't refuse, but we did let our agencies know that our interest in participating in this pilot was a focus on finding ways, given all the things that we are already doing to reduce the environmental impacts of our operations. We wanted to make sure that our customers are paying for. We wanted to make sure that this pilot is focused on things that we can do to reduce the cost of implementing these rules.
Sure. And you did indicate these are all open meetings. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. Can we... Maybe it's a request you can move up the chain, or maybe Xcel can just pass along the information to us. I think it would be helpful for us to get information on when these meetings are being held, so North Dakota has an opportunity to at least find out what's going on. And I don't know if it's of who we make that request to. I don't know if it's that EPA or the Great Plains Institute just had a misunderstanding of how utility regulation works in the throughout the Upper Midwest. But I think it would be helpful for all states to be at least somehow apprised of what's going on with that particular process, understanding that it's an integrated regional system that apparently decisions are being made regarding.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. And we'll do our part to let your staff know when these meetings are, but also we'll share your maybe your comments or your concerns with state agencies, Great Plains Institute, other participants in this process, so that maybe they'll be a little more proactive in reaching out to the other states that are impacted by this process. Yeah,
that would be helpful. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission?
Mr. Loftus, follow up.
I guess the only follow up I have is more of a procedural question for Mr. Bull relating to the EPA project. Just for everybody's, I guess, clarification, Mr. Bull, can you review very quickly how many meetings have been held as a part of this project, and going forward, how perhaps the North Dakota staff could become involved?
Sure. There have been only two face-to-face meetings of this advisory group, and thus far they've been primarily informational, getting presentations from EPA and others about these various rules so that the group has consistent basis from which to work. There have been a couple of calls of the advisory group and a number of calls of the modeling group. And all of that information is available on, there's a MPCA maintains a website posting materials and notices of meetings and such. We've included that website URL in the letter that Mr. Cedarquist sent to the commission, but also can I think we could make phone calls, let people know directly, and that sort of when we have or forward emails as we get them, ask to have the North Dakota Commission staff added to any listservs that the agencies are maintaining.
Judge Wall, if I might, this might
Commissioner Clark.
Yeah, this might streamline the process a bit. I mean, it is a little bit awkward for you as a member of the AC to be kind of making that request. What I might suggest instead is if Excel can just provide us with a contact with the facilitator, which I assume is GPI, or the EPA, whoever the right contact person is, and then we as a commission or staff can write a letter expressing our concerns that we haven't yet been included on this, but explain why it would be advantageous to have other states in at least notified of what's going on. And then we can go ahead and make that contact as opposed to making you do that. Does that make sense?
It certainly does make sense. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything further?
The only other question, I don't know, are you aware, have there been other North Dakota state officials who have been at any of the meetings or on the calls that have taken place? And I'm thinking of, I don't know if someone from our state health department was ever contacted. Maybe that's where a contact was made. And
Mr. Chair, I think my only, I don't know of anyone in particular. My only, I think there might have been someone from an economic development commission, North Dakota Economic Development Commission member, staff person, perhaps, on an email string that I, as we get notices out, I think maybe there was some, there might have been some contact there, but I don't know that that anyone's actually calling into the meetings, and I know that I don't believe there was anyone in attendance.
Sure, and I don't know if there necessarily would need to be someone from the North Dakota Health Department, being that we're probably talking about Minnesota-based facilities. Really, the greater impact is on the regulatory side, the utility side, when costs are asked to be spread across the region. So it's more a rate recovery issue than anything, I think. But okay, thanks. That's all I have.
Anything further from the commission? Mr. Loftus, further follow-up?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Grubin.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackville.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bull. Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to call Mr. Dennis Cole, who is participating by telephone, to respond to questions regarding our nuclear power plants.
Mr. Cole, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Mr. Cole, as you heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years, or both. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Cole, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Cole, earlier I believe Commissioner Kalk had a question relating to the status of life cycle management activities at Monticello. Are you able to provide an update?
Yes, sir, I can. When Mr. Commissioner Kalk visited the site, that was in early April. We had several activities ongoing at the station. We were in a refueling outage. As part of that refueling outage, not knowing what he was referencing to because he saw a lot of construction work, we had work in our switchyard ongoing as part of putting in an additional line to St. Cloud. We also had, as part of the security upgrades required by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, We had a security building as well as some fence and some security equipment being installed. Internal to the plant, Mr. John Grubb, our plant manager, toward the commissioner, and some of the larger life cycle management issues that he should have been able to see during those tours, dealt with the change out of some of our heaters, which are in our secondary system, or what we call the balance of plant that aid us with the extended power uprate, as well as we had a condensate demineralizer system that was being totally replaced within the station. All that work is complete, and it was completed near the end of May.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Cole, I believe there might have also been a question regarding how the company determines what costs related to our nuclear facilities, like the timing of those costs, when they will be incurred and therefore fall within a particular test year. Can you describe how those costs are scheduled and implemented at the nuclear power plants, please?
The schedule for the costs are when we basically place the equipment into service after making the changes. So the costs associated with the work that was performed in this last outage, all that equipment was placed into service and is used and useful. Any work that we have not performed or it's out in the future does not get placed into the schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Your Honor, I have no further questions.
Mr. Grumman.
Oh, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Nothing, thanks.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Calk.
Just one. Thank you for your testimony. That really helped out. Just a question on the plan has increased power by, I think it was 71 megawatts. Do you get a sense of how much more that could happen there in the next 5 to 10 years?
If that's referring back to your earlier question that you asked, Ms. McCartan, I'm not aware of any additional extended power uprates that can be done on the model and the vintage of the Monticello plant that's out there. That being said, the only item could be a technology change that would improve on the, you know, measurement uncertainty on instrumentation.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Loftus.
I have none, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cole. Mr.
You're
Loftus.
Welcome.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to call Mr. David Cedarquist, who is present here.
Mr. Cedarquist, as you know, as you have heard ad nauseum already, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. If you raise your right hand, please, being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Cedarquist, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you. Mr. Cedarquist, I believe Commissioner Kramer earlier had a question regarding Mr. Gopper's recommendations, and in particular, the first recommendation that regarding reporting of outages. Do you have any follow-up to provide to the discussion between Mr. Commissioner Kramer and Mr. Limoges?
Sure. Yeah, one of my roles with Xcel Energy is to work with the commissioners and staff to develop and refine reporting needs and to coordinate meetings and presentations and the like. We currently, by way of background, do provide reliability information to the commission in a number of ways. We have our annual earnings report that we file each May with the commission. Included in there are reliability stats, duration and frequency of outage information for the North Dakota system, as well as the more localized areas served by our five largest substations. We also have introduced the staff to our web-based outage map, and I believe we've demonstrated to the commission how that works. It's a real-time system. You can go online, actually see the multi-state area, see which where outages are presently occurring. There's information there about how many customers are being impacted. We recently, this summer, started providing, I'll call them courtesy emails, if you will, on our feeder level outages to staff. We haven't had any feeder level outages for a while now, so there haven't been too many emails lately, but those are the more significant outages, typically affecting, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 customers at a minimum. So we've been keeping staff abreast of those. And we do have periodic presentations that we make to the commission, either a PI meeting presentation on our reliability programs or results, or other ad hoc meetings as the commission desires.
Thank you.
I might just add, you know, that's kind of the collection of reporting that we do provide, but we're certainly willing to entertain other suggestions from staff. We'd like to work with staff. If there are other needs that they have, we can certainly work with them on that, and perhaps the other utilities that might be impacted by some of those requirements.
Thank you, Mr. Sederquist. In addition to that, I believe Commissioner Clark asked earlier how the company estimated $20,000 for the customer credit program. Can you provide any background as to how the company established that estimate?
Sure. Given the relatively low cost of that program and the variability in outages and the varying numbers of customers that might be impacted by multiple outage, like six or more outages in a calendar year, we felt that it was reasonable to develop an estimate for the year based on our experience in the state of Minnesota. We've had this customer credit program in place there for years, and we know that we expend approximately $300,000 a year on these credits there. We also know the relationships jurisdictionally, the percentages and the allocations. We used the 6% allocator of the NSP Minnesota Operating Company to determine that the $300,000 would translate to $20,000. The $300,000 relates to the Minnesota jurisdiction. On a MIN operating company level, that's about $335,000, and applying the 6% gets us to that $20,000 estimate, which we felt was within a reasonable range to put in the settlement.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have no further questions.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Dave, what are these Minnesota credits, the $320,000 or $25,000, whatever you mentioned, that you're spending, or that you're spending system-wide? Is there a specific rule or requirement in Minnesota for a bill credit, or is this just responding to people that have decided that they're fed up and it's, you know, it's been out too much, and they call and complain, and a credit is then run to placate them, basically? What is the $300,000 based on?
Well, the $300,000 is more of just looking back at our expenditures and seeing. But the program itself, and I'm not the expert on it, I will tell you that my understanding is that this is a tariffed. It's in our Minnesota rate tariffs. I believe we shared that information with staff in developing this settlement program. It describes how we modeled this very similarly to the Minnesota tariff. But beyond that, I guess I'm not too knowledgeable about the history of the customer credit program there.
I apologize, is the tariff in one of these filings? If I don't remember seeing it, but okay. Well, first thing is I'd like to see the tariff, if we could have another, either the Minnesota or the proposed North Dakota, or perhaps both. If we could have another late-filed exhibit.
How is the exhibit to be described, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Would the company be submitting Minnesota's and North Dakota's proposed? North Dakota's proposed?
We are not proposing a tariff in North Dakota. settlement proposal is not the full program that we have in Minnesota. It's a part of it, and we felt that defining it explicitly in the settlement document would suffice. So we did not propose a tariff in North Dakota.
Okay, so this would be the
Minnesota customer credit tariff.
Okay.
All right, so the name of the exhibit will be the Minnesota customer credit tariff. Is that correct, Mr. Cedarquist?
Yeah, I think that'll do.
Okay.
Mr. Loftus, any objection?
We have none, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
For the record, the Exhibit 26, Minnesota Customer Credit Tariff, to be filed by NSP, is received as a late-filed exhibit. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
And the number?
26. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Can you tell me the general standard? Is it in the Minnesota credit program? Is it the same sort of outage time and duration that you proposed in North Dakota?
Yeah, it's simply whether a customer has been impacted by what I'll call a qualifying outage, because there are a couple of outages that wouldn't trigger this. Those would be storm-related outages or public damage, you know, a car or a truck running into a pole. Those would not apply to this program. But all other outages, if you've had six or more of them in a calendar year, then in the following year you would qualify for a payment.
And how long has this been in effect in Minnesota?
I can't answer that.
Was it implemented in response to some major reliability issues?
Again, I would need to defer that question to another one of our experts. Apologize.
You and I have had a lot of discussions about the relative propriety of these individual customer credits that every other ratepayer is helping to pay for. And is there a plan to have the witness that knows a little bit more about this here today or not?
The question is directed to Mr. Loftus, I take it, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Yes, I don't know who it would be.
Your Honor, we did not plan to have any person or company personnel participating over phone to answer questions more detailed with regard to the credit program, but we can certainly try to get somebody present in the room in Minnesota that could answer those questions.
Yes, understanding that we're going to be back after lunch.
Okay.
That's all I have then. Thank you.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. Do you know, does XL get recovery in Minnesota for the customer credit?
My understanding is that in Minnesota, when the program was originally set up, those payments were characterized as penalties, and as such were not included and have not been included in rates. In our proposal, we view these payments as more or less partial compensation or even a refund, if you will, for service that did not meet standards. It's part of an overall reliability program that we have that includes many other things, and it's part of our response to a reliability situation, much like if we were going to go out and do a spot trim on somebody's. This is just part of our overall approach. So that's how we view these credits.
I have a concern, I think, that's similar to what Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco described, which is it does seem odd, though, that it's not not any skin off XL's back. It's $20,000 that's coming from other ratepayers to compensate those ratepayers that have received some poor quality of service. So what's XL's skin in the game?
Well, we certainly would have an incentive, Commissioner, to improve upon the record, given a fixed recovery in rates, just like any other cost. We definitely would endeavor to cut that number as low as possible. It would be difficult to project that no outages at all would ever occur, or multiple outages, that no customer would be impacted. But we definitely feel, as Ms. McCartan indicated before, it's just another tool. It's another way for us to be aware of the impacts of our outages and where there might be pockets that need addressing. So we think that, you know, we do have skin in the game, that it is important to us.
Okay, that's all I... David, would you be the one to direct questions to regarding the reasonableness of cost recovery for the IntelliTeam switches?
I can handle some of that, but perhaps Mr. Felling would be more appropriate.
Okay. Thanks. I'll reserve that for him then. Thanks.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Call.
Hey, Dave. Thank you for testimony. Just are you going to be the witness, or who's the witness going to address the? I know you know North Dakota system very well, but the correlation to the number of line workers to the population.
I believe Ms. McCartan will address that.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Loftus.
I have none, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Dave, I'd just like to know if the company would be willing to, in order to provide information and focus to the company, instead of sending $50 to the customers that have the six mm-hmm. outages, you could report those to the commission. And that would give you a clue that that was happening, and would that cost less than $50 if you reported every one of those to the commission?
Just simply report them?
Yes, instead of the other reporting proposal that's under discussion.
Yeah, we can do that.
Thanks.
Follow up questions from the commission. Mr. Loftus.
Your Honor, I have none. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman.
Oh, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cedarquist.
Thank you.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to recall Ms. McCartan.
Ms. McCartan, you understand, of course, that your testimony continues under oath and subject to penalties of perjury.
Yes, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. McCartan, Commissioner Kalk had a question regarding the staffing levels in North Dakota. Do you have a response to his question?
Yes, I do. Commissioner, we requested this information from the manager of our construction forces in North Dakota. What the information I have is that in Grand Forks, we have 7 crew members assigned to work out of Grand Forks. In Minot, we currently have 6, but are increasing that to 8. In Fargo, we have 11. The relative population is Minot is the smallest at around 15,000. Grand Forks a little bit larger at around 23,000. And then Fargo, not counting a lot of all the outlining, but in the area of 46,000. So I think those numbers are commensurate with the population, and also reflecting the very rapid growth around the Minot area and the addition of a couple of crew members to that service center. The other thing I would note is that we augment these are year-round forces, the accommodating vacation and so forth, but we augment our work crews at all locations to accommodate high volumes of work with contract crews, for example. So high construction period, certainly storm restoration, we augment the local resources.
Your Honor, I have no further questions.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Nothing, Your Honor.
Questions from the commission? Commissioner Cook.
Thank you, Laura, for your testimony. The I guess I'll just follow through a little bit and some questions. So we're going to grow Minot by a couple more, so 8 for roughly 15,000 people, knowing that's a growing region. Some of the concerns I guess I have are that, you know, in conversation with a lot of folks in the northwestern part of the state and the center part of the state, there's just not enough of certain skill sets to go around. So we're all in a bidding war for contractors and subcontractors and all that. So the growth of Minot to 8 full-time employees I think makes sense. But if then you go 8 to 15,000, that would equal 24 people by the 11 that should be in the Fargo area full-time, if we correlate those same numbers. So why wouldn't we grow the Fargo staff a little bit more than if we're going to try to keep the same number of people per system? Because the Minot system has performed very well. And my inclination is just because you've got techs in the ground that know their system very, very well.
Commissioner, these staffing levels reflect needs to maintain and serve the current needs in the current service territory, but they also are looking at what's efficient to meet the growth. So I think that it's probably an apples and oranges looking at Fargo versus Minot. I think the growth in Fargo is not the same as we see in Minot. So the additional staffing that Minot needs, it's not correlated just to the population count, I guess, is the point I would make. And hearing from the Minot city manager about a month ago of the almost, I don't know what the correct word is, but the takeoff in building permits and building activity around their housing and so forth, there's a real pressing need there. So I think that the addition of staff in Minot is reacting to that very localized need.
So the growth in Fargo is predominantly not in your region, mostly Cass County Electric, perhaps?
Well, there is that as well. We have the defined service territory.
And I believe that you have a service area agreement with Verendry and Minot. Is that right?
I'm sorry, what?
A service area agreement between yourself and Verendry and
Minot? Verendry with the co-op?
I think you have one of those in file, don't you? That's a question, I guess, just trying to I'll check with our staff on that one, because I just have an inkling that there's a tie-in to how do you get to the number of technicians? I just don't think we have enough people on the ground. I hear what you're saying, but when we know an area has been taxed with flooding, we know an area has previously performed, not what the rest of the system is. The technology may be a piece of the answer, but I just still believe people out there looking at the systems every day, knowing their system, is going to increase their liability. So I guess that's just my pontification. Thank you, Your Honor.
Further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Loftus.
I have none, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
None, thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. McCartney. Mr. Loftus.
Your Honor, I'm told that we have somebody in Minnesota who can respond to the questions from Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco regarding the credit payments. Her name is Jody Londo, so I would like to ask her to respond to those questions.
Her last name, please.
Sure, it's L-O-N-D-O.
Ms. Londo, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Commissioners.
Ms. Londo, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Being advised regarding perjury, Ms. Londo, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you. Your Honor, I have no questions for this witness, but simply offer her to answer any questions from the parties or the commissioners.
Mr. Grumman. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Good morning. Would you be able to fill in some details about the customer credit tariff in Minnesota? Specifically, I was curious about when, how long that tariff's been effective, when it took effect, and some specifics about when you give the credit, under what conditions, what are the benchmarks, and how much the credits are, and then I believe we have the answer to this, but you can confirm about whether any of that is recovered in rates in Minnesota.
Okay. Well, these outage credit payments were established in a 2002 docket before the Minnesota Commission.
Ms. Londo, would you just give me a minute, please?
She may just want to talk closer to the mic
rather than mess with the switches. Ms. Londo, we're having... I certainly welcome the advice, Commissioner. Ms. Londo, we're having trouble hearing you, and it may be because you're rather soft-spoken. If you would move closer to your microphone and speak up, please. You may proceed.
Okay. Is this better?
Let's try it, and we'll see.
Okay. The customer outage credits in Minnesota were established in a 2002 docket before the Minnesota Commission. They took effect in 2004. That was the first performance year that they took effect. The dollar amounts are a $50 annual credit to customers that experience a sustained outage, six or more sustained outages in a year, a $50 credit to customers who experience an outage that lasts 24 hours or more, and that's for each one of those outages. Those are the general credits that apply to all customers. There were some other credits developed out of a more recent rate case to some municipal pumping customers, but that's a pretty limited application. And these payments are not recovered in rates.
Thank you. That's all the questions that I have.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Sure. Just we had heard earlier from another witness that the total amount that was paid out in Minnesota was, I forget, it was 300-some thousand, 300, 350, somewhere in there. Do you have that figure handy?
I don't have that in front of me, no. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I guess the question would be regarding whether that total would have included both the sustained outage, the six or more, those customers who receive money on the basis of having six or more 5-minute outages or greater, as well as the extended 24-hour outage payments. I'm trying to figure out if, being that it doesn't appear that North Dakota's includes the extended outage, if that somehow skews the $20,000 number that they arrived at for recovery here. But if you don't have the
answer, I can say that that dollar amount is in the range of the annual payments that we pay that would include all of those credits.
Okay.
But I just don't have the specific dollar amount in front of me.
It would be in the range of $300,000 to $350,000.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I have.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Loftus?
Your Honor, I have none.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Only if you could please tell us what prompted the filing of the tariff in Minnesota?
Yes, the tariff was part of a negotiated settlement that was between parties stemming from an investigation regarding the company's service quality.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Any follow-up, Mr. Loftus?
Your Honor, I do have one brief question for Ms. Londo. Ms. Londo, are you aware if other utilities have similar types of service quality programs within the state of Minnesota?
Xcel Energy is the only utility in Minnesota that has a service quality tariff that has financial components to it like these credits.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have nothing further.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Nothing, thanks.
Any follow-up from the commission? Thank you very much, Mr. Law. Thank you very much, Ms. Londo.
Thank you.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd also like to recall Mr. John Felling to respond to the IntelliTeam switching costs.
Mr. Felling, you understand, of course, that your testimony continues under oath and subject to penalties of perjury.
Yes, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you. Mr. Felling, I believe earlier Commissioner Clark asked for a breakdown of the $250,000 in costs that are related to the 25 IntelliTeam switches as referenced in the settlement agreement. Can you provide that background?
Yes, I can. I've got a schedule in front of me here. I do not believe the schedule is on the record, but I can speak to the numbers here that were used to develop the $250,000. There's 100. Well, first off, on the life we assumed was 31 and a half years, which I is consistent with Mr. Manser's earlier testimony of 30 to 35 years. We have a capital investment of $2.5 million, again, with a life of 31 and a half years. We assumed a 30% removal rate with no salvage. Those numbers work out to a first-year revenue requirement. The depreciation is $103,000. And then return on rate base plus taxes makes up $147,000, giving us a $250,000 total.
Thank you, Mr. Felling. Your Honor, I think it might be appropriate if I could offer and introduce into the record the schedule that Mr. Felling referenced. I'm not sure that we have additional copies at this very moment, but we can certainly make those over the lunch break and bring those back. So I would like to offer and introduce into the record as exhibit number 27. 27, yes, Your Honor.
And which is identified how, please?
What's the title of that?
Calculation of levelized annual revenue requirements, IntelliTeam switches.
Calculation of.
The title on the report is Calculation of Levelized Annual Revenue Requirements, IntelliTeam switches.
All right, Council, let's try this out. I'm expecting no objections. You obviously have a right to examine the exhibit, and if you wish to do that, we'll just postpone the offer. But on the chance that you're not asking for that, Mr. Grumman, any objection?
No, we've discussed that. No objection, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
I don't have any objection, but was it prepared by you?
This schedule was not prepared by me. No, I have reviewed it, but I did not prepare it.
Did we? I may have missed it. Did we know who prepared this? Was that question originally asked by Mr. Loftus?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
I believe it was prepared by someone in my department, but I don't know specifically who did it.
Who works under your supervision?
Not under my supervision, a peer of mine.
And for what purpose was it prepared?
For purposes of establishing support for the settlement agreement.
Okay. I have no objection.
Exhibit 27 is received.
Thank you, Your Honor. And, Mr. Felling, I believe there's a question perhaps from Commissioner Clark regarding, I guess, the recovery of the IntelliTeam switch costs. Do you have any further discussion to provide in response to that question?
I don't remember specifically what the question was you're referring to.
Your Honor, in that case, I'll tender the witness for any questions from the commissioners or the parties, and then perhaps Commissioner Clark can raise that question.
Yes, sir. Let me just add, though, that you will at the break obtain copies of the exhibit for counsel and the commissioners.
Yes, Your Honor, we'll be happy to do that.
All right, and be sure that the court reporter has the original, of course. All right.
Thank you.
Away we go. Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No.
Questions from the commission? Commissioner Clark.
No, that schedule that you'll be providing should be what I need, and I would just indicate probably to Mr. Diller when he's called that I'll probably ask if he finds it reasonable as advocacy staff. So if he could take the time to review that, that would be good.
Any further questions from the commission? If not, I hesitate. Well, let's do the game, I guess. Mr. Loftus, follow up?
I have none, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
Thank you, thank you very much, Mr. Felling. Mr. Loftus.
Your Honor, I'd like to call Ms. Jill Reed to provide testimony regarding our compensation. During the break, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco advised me that she had some questions regarding compensation.
Ms. Reed, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Just fine. Thank you. Ms. Reed, as you have heard me advise previous witnesses, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years, or both. Being advised regarding perjury, Ms. Reed, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I have no questions for this witness, but tender the witness for any questions from the commissioners or the parties.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
I do, but I didn't know this witness was next, and I'm looking for my notes. So I have 5 minutes or one
we'll
minute.
We'll be in recess for, let's say, 10 minutes. By the clock here, let's be in session at 11:45, please.
I actually think that we sat with this, that it would be faster to put a third arm on the floor.